Welcome to the Food and Faith Podcast, conversations from the soil and around the table with your co-hosts, Sam Chamlin and Anna Woofenden. Welcome to our special holiday Christmas episode of Food and Faith Podcast. We decided that maybe you, our listeners, might want to hear from us, your co-hosts. And we realized that we actually have some things to say about food and faith and Christmas time and the incarnation and ecology. And so you've got us today.
So, yeah, everybody was busy, right? Because it's the holiday season.
Don't tell them, Sam.
And you and I just didn't want to work for an hour for a little while. So we figured we'll just talk to each other and record it.
Yeah, Sam's pretty fun to talk to. So I thought it'd be a good way to spend an hour.
Look, I'm
Don't
really
worry.
Glad.
We're not going to keep you for an hour, guests. So, Sam, tell me what this time of year looks like for you.
Yeah, so I really enjoy Thanksgiving time because it's my one opportunity to breathe real deep before you do this huge deep dive into the Christmas season. So for me right now, a lot of it is, having two congregations that I pastor, one at St. Mark's, just trying to get around and just, you're planning worship services, you're planning Advent, you're planning Christmas Eve, and all that's really good. You're also at the end of the year just trying to make sure that you catch up with people, your shut-ins, just try to say hi. Making sure that people who have been ill or, maybe people who have lost a loved one, just hear from their pastor at this time of the year, just because of all the complications that often come with that. This season just raises up so much stuff. And so it's a high pastoral time for me anyway, outside of just worship prep. And then keep until we're getting ready for our Christmas in the Barn service, which is always the highlight of our year. So we're looking forward to decorating the barn and, being there the Sunday before Christmas and just celebrating incarnation. And in a lot of ways, it's also become celebrating the fact that we made it another year and how surprised we are that we did that. So, and then of course, just prepping with children, I have three kids. And so the idea, trying to be with them as they celebrate the holiday and get excited for it is sort of front and center for me. So there's a lot going on. It's a lot of running around, but so much of it is fulfilling. And I guess at the end of the day, that's what gets you up in the day, up in the morning. So that's what's it for me. You've had an interesting and busy month. I know you've been all over the place. So what are you up to?
It feels like I'm back in parish ministry and that I'm preaching 4 out of the 5 Sundays this month, but they're all going to be in different places. So I think another thing that's been fun is that it means that I've been able to give some of these the various parish pastors a break. So doing some pulpit supply, working with the continuing work with Swedenborg Chapel in Boston and finishing up that gig and working with the local UCC church that I'm on part-time staff with here in Ohio, and went to Cincinnati this weekend, preached there. So it's it feels like touching base with Advent in different communities and maybe in some ways being more present to being pastor to the pastors that I work with, and that I don't have the direct congregations that I'm responsible for pastorally. But I can be supportive in this busy season, and my support goes out to you. I know the fullness of it.
I'm learning that for the first time this year. Like, I've always preached every Sunday of Advent, and this year I have a student, a seminary student, who's doing a field education experience, and so I gave her the 4th Sunday of Advent. So finally I don't have to preach all 4. So Co, if you're listening to this, thank you so much. And Anna, thank you for just being there, because the season gets insane. So yes, I'm sure you're doing quite a service to pastoring the pastors when everybody kind of forgets that we're human too at this time of the year.
It's a time, I think, to remember about our shared humanity, right? So maybe that's an important piece. So I was struck by what you're saying as a parent, that in amongst all that you're doing, that you also are trying to create a magical good time for your kids around this season. And I wonder if you have any stories from your childhood around Christmas, and if those come back to you or affect the way that you interact with this season.
It does, yeah. And so much of it, I mean, so many of my best memories really do touch the conversations that we've had on this pod for a while, just thinking about how growing up on a dairy farm affected how we celebrated this season. Some of those ways were really annoying. Like, it was never a quote-unquote tradition, but it was tradition that we had to wait until all the animals were fed before we were allowed to open up any presents. And so so my mother would go out and she'd milk at 4 o'clock in the morning. But my father would always, he was up about 6:30, but then there was always just a lot of work to do. And so, you know, obviously me and my brother and my sister would be up really early, but then we'd have to wait until like 10:30 by the time he finally got around to feeding everything. So it just became this just huge ball of childhood joy and anxiety at the same time. Is he done yet? So but yeah, just the idea that the work needed to be done even on Christmas before we were allowed to celebrate, it's just kind of part of, it's always sort of been part of who I am and how I think about the season. Yeah, but I'm also reminded too that one of the things we always did on Christmas Eve, and this is one of those mystical things that I didn't really appreciate until I was much older, is that my mom always made sure that everything was cleaned out and was bedded down specially on Christmas Eve before we went out to Christmas Eve service. Because she had always held that she believed that on Christmas Eve, like at midnight between Christmas Eve and Christmas, that, you know, all the animals in some way would stop and acknowledge the Creator and the birth of the Savior. And so she wanted to make sure that they had as good a worship space as we had when we would go out to Christmas Eve service. And it was so weird that it was never a burden. Like, it, my mom would say, go bed up, which 99% of the time was always a pain and it always made extra work and I just wanted to go out and play. But I never remember it being a burden that night. Like, it always kind of made the evening go faster. And you know, as a kid, you want Christmas Eve to be over as quickly as possible because Christmas is coming. But it actually kind of helped the day go faster. Like, we felt like it was part of the celebration, and it was never extra work, and we got to spend a little time with the animals. So so those are some things just from the farm that I remember, that trying to figure out how I translate them to my own kids now, you know. And I'm sure my son will have to go out and I'll make him go out and bed up the dairy goats that we have, and my girls will clean out their rabbits and make sure that they're good to go. Just because if all creation celebrates with us, then give them a good space to do that. So so a lot of good memories from the farm, you know, and that was always a joy for us.
Did you find, it was the water you were swimming in, so maybe it's only in retrospect, but the fact that there were animals in the nativity story, did that mean something to you in a way that you now could contrast with someone who didn't live on a farm with animals?
Yeah, it never.
Or was that just like, it didn't occur to you because that was your life you were living?
Yeah, I would say it didn't occur to me. Like, it's like, okay, we have a nativity set. That's cool. There's animals every day. As I got older and started to realize what a special thing that was for other people, that's when this is the one time that actually farm animals were kind of in their face in some way, shape, or form. You know, the nativity would come out and all of a sudden people that hadn't engaged with a sheep or a cow all year long had them sitting on their mantelpiece. And so there's something about that, like, oh, wow. Like, our food and the way food is produced does get set aside and it's something that we can bring out when it's part of our celebration. And then we can put it back away when we're done with it, when we don't want to think about it. I don't want to get too deep with it, but I mean, there's a certain amount of privilege that goes with that you can pay attention to it when you want to and when you don't. And so that's something that has informed as I've gotten older and realized that people didn't have that experience that of growing up with animals, that bringing that to their attention more regularly, that we don't just have sheep at cute times of the year, Easter and Christmas, but really that there are people who tend to these things all year long. And how that shaped me as a Christian and as a person of faith, that daily service to something else that was living, and the idea that our relationship is actually symbiotic. I take care of the cows take care of us in some way. has shaped me in a lot of ways. So, but it is fun now to think about it. Like, okay, this is one of those holidays we get to play with the animals. Like, and that's a great thing. And actually the animals are really part and partial to how we tell our story. So as a kid, I was swimming in it. Now that I'm older, I'm like, okay, I don't swim in it quite as much, but I'm happy to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, I found it interesting just as I was putting up our nativity set a couple weeks ago, just thinking about some of the characters of this scene are four-legged, you know, and thinking about that, there aren't a lot of other, you know, think about like Holy Week. There aren't, like, I guess you've got the rooster crowing, but
yeah, and you got Donkey on Palm Sunday, but that's about it.
Donkey on Palm Sunday, right? So, I mean, there's some animals at play, but not to the extent of that the nativity set is surrounded by animals. And, you know, and whether the camels would have really been with the Magi or not, who knows? I mean, it's all of them.
Yeah.
But in our nativity set, they are, you know, and you got the sheep and you got the cows. So growing up, we had chickens most of my childhood and cats. And so it was always... I always kind of think about, like, well, there aren't usually chickens at the but it was when, like, the hay would come out. You know, you need hay to make the little, like, nativity scene. There is kind of there's a bringing in of the outdoors into the indoors and the farm into the house. And that awareness of it is changed in that way.
Now, did you ever include your animals in your celebration, like even to the point of like getting a present for the cats?
No.
No?
I don't think so. Maybe. That's a good question.
Because I think that's something that's really changed. I watch people now, like, you know, animals are a part of our family. And so how that plays into holidays, you know, even to the point where, I mean, we try to make sure the dog has a little extra clean water and fresher food, you know, just because it's Christmas and she's part of the family.
Yeah, that's lovely. I mean, I think our cats were outdoor cats and the chickens were chickens. After I left home, there were cows and sheep and goats and things. So there may have been a more of that in the next generations of the family. But my favorite Christmas memory kind of takes this the opposite. It was taking the nativity outdoors. And the way that our family lore tells it, it was when my sister was about 4 or 5 years, one of my sisters was about 4 or 5 years old and was just desperately waiting for Christmas and so excited that she was kind of, you know, needed some entertainment. So my mom redirected that energy and they, and I kind of vaguely remember they were doing some secret thing and the rest of us, you know, were like, whatever, doing our thing. But, and they made luminaries, taking, you know, brown paper bag, like lunch bags and put sand at the bottom and little tea light candles and made this pathway out through the woods. I grew up on 10 acres. So we had woods to go out into. And then later on that evening, the whole family went out and the luminaries were lit and we went out singing Christmas carols. And when we got out to this place in the woods, they'd taken one of the family favorite baby dolls at the time and wrapped it up and put down hay and, you know, cedar branches and candles. And we would, you know, read the Christmas story and be out in the woods. And that quickly became a favorite family tradition every Christmas Eve. I grew up on a small island with a ferry that stopped at 6 o'clock. So going to Christmas Eve service wasn't a thing. So we would take that time and there was just always something very, very precious about, I mean, obviously, you know, the candles and the singing, but about seeing the nativity, see that scene out in the woods. And every year, so different, you know, after a while, different kids would be in charge of putting it, so it would be different places. I remember one year it rarely snows in Northwest Washington, but there was snow, and so the manger, if you will, was made out of like snow with a little candle that was making it glow. Like it was just, there was always some way to engage the natural world and to bring the natural world together with the story of the nativity. And that still remains my favorite scenes. It was one of my favorite things at the Garden Church too, is that we were doing Christmas Eve for me outdoors again. I'm like, why do we do Christmas Eve service inside? That's a terrible idea. Like, isn't it supposed to be outside? And so kind of like the way you had animals just part of it, I'm like, well, of course Christmas Eve is outside. Isn't that what every family does?
Oh, that's phenomenal. Especially having that one special memory of having snow and then making that a part of me. I can only imagine what it must have been like to walk out into those woods in it. And as you're telling that, it occurs to me, and for all the obvious reasons that, I mean, it's the celebration of the incarnation, we do want it to be much more tangible. I mean, we want to go outside. We want to engage with the animals. We want to spread hay. Like it has just a different feel, a much more tangible feel to it. You know, now I know, I mean, some communities do like crosswalks at Triduum, you know, Easter kind of thing. You know, there's some interesting things that happen there, sunrise services and the like, but that's not ubiquitous like nativity scenes and things of that nature are. I wonder what you make of that as a pastor and a theologian. Why is it we insist on doing this particular holiday in this particular way?
I think just the nature of the fact that it's about incarnation. You know, if we're celebrating that this big God of the universe came and slipped into human skin and God was incarnate in Christ, that incarnation, that infleshing, it just seems like it points straight there. Mm-hmm. You know, that we can't just stop with the flesh. I think it lends itself immediately to look at the natural world around us, to look at that, where is in that, you know, Emmanuel, God with us, how is God being with us in the person of Christ, but also in the flesh of the world. You know, we could get all geeky and Greek.
That's what we do.
Yeah, should we get all geeky and Greek?
Sure, why not?
I just think that this word flesh is so interesting, and I am not a Greek scholar, and so our listeners can let's say add to this interpretation. Yes. But I know that some of the different definitions, you know, are that body and bodily condition, but that there also is this idea of earth and earthly and the fellow humans and the kindred, and that could even extrapolate it out into just matter and what the stuff of the world. And so if, you know, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and God came and dwelt among us, if God was enfleshed among us, that, I mean, I personally believe that in the personhood of Jesus Christ, but also that is in our natural world, that God is in and amongst all the things, the animals, the cedar trees, the that which is of creation and that dwells among us. So in my tradition, in the Swedenborgian tradition, we have this idea that all of the natural world is infused with a spiritual reality, and not pantheism. It's not that the natural world is God, but that God is in it. It's more of a panentheistic view, that idea that God is bigger and beyond, but also is infused in it. And that to me is where this incarnation bit really, you know, the rubber meets the road, or the rubber meets the grass or the soil. So that yes, it's about our humanity, but it's also about our part within the natural world, and that there is a spiritual reality in that. There's a spiritual reality in our flesh, but there's also a spiritual reality in creation.
I mean, it occurs to me the way we talk about it at KNT is, There's something unique about who and what we are as humans, but that ultimately we are a creature that is part of an ecosystem, and that God has created that entire ecosystem, not just us, and that God is invested in the entirety of an ecosystem, and how it is, how, and so each piece is connected to one another through the Spirit, through the God that has created all things. And that's something that I'm learning as I learn a little bit more about your tradition and figuring out that, oh, actually, these ideas about God being present in more than just humanity is actually spread through a great deal of Christianity and Christian traditions, and then also even outside of yours and my Christian bounds, that is shared across religious and faith traditions across the world. But your Swedenborgian sort of way of talking about it has actually contributed a good bit to sort of helping me work that through. Because, yeah, people do hear it as a pantheism, and it's not. It's something grander and bigger than that. And it's something that the purpose of salvation, this discussion that we start every year at Christmas about why is incarnation important? Well, we say, well, because God comes to save the world. What does it mean that God comes to save the world? Well, this salvation is not just for you and for me, but it's for all things, that together all things are being made new. And I think that's the hope, that's the reason Christmas still matters, because we're still hoping. Yes. We come back every year at this time, we start the conversation over that God might actually care about all things and that God might actually be saving all things. And so we're going to follow this person, Jesus, and see what God might have to say about that.
You know, I have piles of books on my desk, but one of them is one of our guests, Nerea's book, so The Resurrection Matters. And right before we were recording this, I was thinking, I love that title. I love talking about resurrection. And I, you know, have all these ecological riffs about resurrection and compost heaps, and I love it. And then I was thinking, but incarnation matters too.
Yes.
And that those really go hand in hand in so many ways. Mm-hmm. In that, I mean, certainly in the story and the life of Christ, I mean, to be incarnated and born before he could live, die, and be resurrected. But thinking about it in the natural world as well, like just that awareness of an incarnational theology that God is here with us and in working through the natural world, working in and around, it changes things. I mean, I think it does. It makes us live into our interconnection in a different way. Madeline L'Engle is one of my favorite theologians.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Because she's wonderful, right? but she has this quote. It's actually been on my email signature for a few years now. And she says that there's nothing so secular that it cannot be sacred. And that is one of the deepest messages of the incarnation, that there's nothing so secular that it cannot be sacred. And, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, why the church now, and why are we doing these things to reimagine church? Why are we doing church in barns and in gardens and around tables? And for me, it really, a lot of it comes back to that, is that belief that these things, eating together, farming together, they're not so secular that they can't be sacred.
Oh,
and so I think the incarnation is a key theological piece of why it is that we are exploring these conversations, why it is that you and I both have done the pastoral and ministry work that we're doing, because it really brings in that sacredness, the sacramentality that, yes, is in the explicit sacraments, but that can be broadened into bedding down the animals.
Oh, yeah.
You know, is that the right term?
No, I think down? So. I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah, because every year, just pastoring a classic church and also just being a human that lives in a particular town, I mean, you always get the, you know, the war on Christmas kind of stuff. You know, and in a lot of ways, I'm like, yeah, there's like, yeah, this time of the year does have so many complicating factors to it. There's so much demanded of us. But then my invitation to people is say, well, why do you think that is? Like, why do you think this is the holiday that gets so cluttered? And, you know, I'm careful about, you know, sort of words like attack and all that kind of stuff. But if you were going to attack, if you wanted to pull apart Christianity, I think you would do it by breaking down our idea of incarnation, that well, God didn't actually come down to the world, or God isn't actually going to redeem everything. He's just going to suck us up into some ethereal never world somewhere. And so the more we can do to move our eyes away from all that is around us and all that God has created, the more likely we are to sort of invest in the world as it is and to dive into the consumerism and into the into an unhelpful materialistic viewpoint. And so I think, yeah, I totally agree with what we're doing is trying to say, wait a second, that taking the idea of the incarnation seriously and saying that God actually did take on flesh and did actually walk with us and experience the same death that we did. And not only that, Jesus walked most closely with the outcasts and the marginalized, the sick and the poor. And so because of that, to follow Jesus takes us to those places. And that's where our faith comes alive. And that's sort of the crux of the incarnation. It's not just that, oh, God came to save us. No, God actually called us to open our eyes to all created things and to pay attention to that and to join Jesus alongside the poor, the marginalized, the forgotten, and those whose voices haven't been heard. Because I think everybody has a voice. It's just a matter of whose voices get heard. And so... So that's why, yes, K&T is based on the idea of taking the incarnation seriously, and that's why it's also so invested in social justice, because Jesus was invested in that. We don't have the Christmas does not allow us the luxury of ignoring our brothers and sisters. And so that's super important to us, and I hear that work out of you, I mean, in your preaching and your teaching, Garden Church, and all the work that you do around Way Forest and all that kind of stuff, just your constant call back to that feels very incarnational to me. And so I've learned so much from you just about always having one eye in that, as we also have one eye on the theology and thinking about it, because that theology has got to take us somewhere. And that's my prayer for Christmas, that it would do that.
Yeah, you got your Christmas Eve service right sermon. Oh, right there.
All right, a little closer to done then.
That was good. No, I mean, I think this is my ongoing broken record that I'm preaching this month is this idea that, and I'm looking at Mary in the Magnificat, and if you like think about, you can't read the Magnificat without going there. You have to, or I can't. I don't know how to read the Magnificat without looking at it. Jesus's very act of the way and the placement of the incarnation tells us so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be born to this virgin young woman on the outskirts, you know, in Nazareth, this town where nothing good could come from. She could probably have been stoned for the fact that she was pregnant and not married. I mean, she's part of, you know, at that time, a marginalized religious group under occupation. I mean, like the list kind of goes on and on and on. Even like, besides the fact that this all-powerful God decided to incarnate as an infant, which of course we know is, you know, yes, innocent, but also vulnerable. And the list just goes on and on. And then to the shepherds, you know, the shepherds were like, you know, the people relied upon them, but they were not probably revered in society.
A bunch of farmers that I know often joke, there's a reason they kept them in the fields.
Right.
Like, there's a reason that this group of people was just sent out in the fields to watch sheep and they were never allowed to come back into town.
Right. And that's where the angels went to announce.
And I love shepherds, so I don't want to get a lot of Twitter mentions about that comment.
No, we are honoring. We are honoring the
exactly.
fact. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's really easy to gloss over and to put a nice little glow around these stories. And it's like you said, it's like, keep the nativity set, keep the animals outside. It's like, nope, this is the season where we read these stories that were really pushing, that really, I think, push us to look more deeply at who is being pushed to the edges. Who are the people in our society now that are being courageous like Mary and saying yes to being the hungry with good things and lifting the lowly up? How are we part of that? And, you know, I think it really connects so powerfully and beautifully this idea of interconnection as well, that, you know, we've talked often on the pod about if you just pull the one thread, I think you said that at a round table of Headwaters, like that one, pull the one thread of food and you begin to see the injustice that is, and the justice that happens. I think that the story of Advent and the story of the incarnation does a similar thing.
Mm-hmm.
Pull the thread of what were the power dynamics going on? Pull the thread of what was the inequality that was happening at that time and how is this addressing it? And we start to see that we are all connected and that Christ came for that.
Yeah.
Right? Christ came into that. Christ came to point us to and to renew all, to renew that. So I think people would like Christmas to just be all pretty and soft and gentle. And I think if we read the Gospels, we find that something much more powerful than that is happening.
Yeah, it really doesn't want to. Christmas really does not want to go into the box with a bow.
No.
I mean, and it's, I've spent a lot of time, I don't know about you, surprisingly, I've spent more time with Hebrew Bible texts than in that the lectionary prescribes than I have the gospel text. You just can't read that without hearing this implicit criticism of all that is. And that criticism and that prophetic calling out also creates this prophetic imagination there may be another world coming. And getting to that world isn't pretty and it isn't nice and it's babies being born and it's being stuck out in barns and it's shepherds and all the things you mentioned. It doesn't want to, which is another question that I ask. Why is it that we insist on Christmas being the prettiest of all seasons? And in so many ways, I love that beauty. I mean, I love the Christmas tree in my house and I love looking at the Christmas lights and presents under the tree. I'm not here to say we shouldn't do that, but it is to say that there's a lot more grittiness that comes with this season than sometimes we're willing to look at. And sometimes we do cover it over with sort of the beauty and the materiality of it. And so I think part of our call as believers is to stay in those uncomfortable places. That when Mary says, yeah, we're going to tear down the powerful, we're going to raise up the lowly, like that's complicated. Hardcore. That's rough. That's really hardcore. Yeah, like that's not even like poetic language. That's in your face. Here's what's going to happen. The hungry will be fed and those who are well fed will go away hungry. Like, whew. All right, Mary, you get after that. It's hard to preach. And that's one of the things I think about with my brothers and sisters, thinking about you. I mean, proclaiming that is tough when the expectation is, you know, just give a little hope, a little peace, a little love, you know, kind of touch on it and everybody's happy and we all go home and we sang our songs. Well, this is the start of the story. And if we start there, like if we start in the with a prettiness and we cover it over, then there's a good chance that down the road we'll never get to the dramatic and prophetic realities that this story is supposed to have. But if we're willing to sit in this tough spot, this complicated message that the incarnation has, I bet as we get closer and closer to the cross and then beyond, that we'll actually have a better sense of what Jesus came to actually do. So our faith really depends on us getting this season right, or at least sitting in its uncomfortable claims for a little while and just letting ourselves be a little uncomfortable with that.
So as you're talking, I'm having a little fight in my head because I'm right there with you. I mean, I think I just said it a minute ago, like we try to gloss over and make it all pretty. But then as you're describing, like, how we have our Christmas tree and have nativity, and I love Christmas time. Like, I mean, I was so excited to get the house decorated.
You're not a day after Thanksgiving person, are you?
No, we were out of town. I waited till the first Sunday of Advent. Is that okay?
It's better.
Yeah. But I love it, and you know what? It's interesting. So I guess my wondering, the argument I'm having in my head is there a way to fully embrace the beauty and the peace, the hope, joy, love of Advent while not glossing over the revolutionary reality of it? And I just think in my own life, it's kind of been a rough couple of weeks at our family, and I've noticed myself saying a couple of times, okay, I can do this and this and this to that. And then I need to put it aside. And the thing that I've said is, I'm just going to focus on getting ready for Christmas. And that somehow wrapping presents and decorating the tree and, you know, turning on the lights and lighting some candles and having some time with Christmas music playing is actually the salvation. It's the salvation that I'm finding that enables me to focus on and to trust that this bigger God is holding a bigger picture. God is leading us. God is caring for us. And so I guess I'm just, as I usually do, advocating for living in the tension and the both and of not to gloss over, but that it's also not, and I think it is of God to find beauty and hope and peace. And some of us find that in decorating our houses.
Oh, yeah, that question.
I want to learn how to make a gluten-free Yule log. You know, like, that's bringing me joy right now.
Ooh, so somebody needs to tweet us that. I have no idea how to do that.
I'm working on it. Mary, Barry, and I are on the case.
For as much as you want to get into it, my family will tell you that I can be a bit grinchy about it. And most of it's just I could just be grinchy around the season. I always get in trouble because as a kid, we used to put up our Christmas tree on my dad's birthday, which is December 17th. And so, like, I'm very used to just waiting until Advent is almost up before we ever get around to decorating anything. And then we'd leave our tree up to like February to the point where it was a fire hazard. But that's a different thing.
That's a different story. That's a different holiday.
You know, at that point, yeah, we're kind of turning it into a Valentine tree. But I think what you're enunciating is actually a way of living into incarnation. That incarnational living is fundamentally at its core a way of joy and peace. It is living into that and finding joy and finding God's presence in all those things, in the place where we live, and so we decorate, and in the music that we enjoy, and in the relationships that we have. So I also want to live into that both and.
And the food.
And the food. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, that's right. Food and Faith Pod. One of these days I'll remember that. Yeah, you know, and all of that. And I mean, and Kendall talked beautifully about taking joy in that which we eat, even if it's not organic and local and grass-fed. You know, just pizza sometimes is just the best thing ever, you know. And so I do think that you can hold both those things, that we can, in our faith, train our eyes on the world that Jesus comes to bring, the kingdom or the reign of God that he comes to bring, and the challenges that presents. And then also to say, on this day, this is where I'm at. In the words of St. Paul, to find contentment in that and to find joy and peace and a little experience of that kingdom in just the very place where I happen to be. And with the people that I'm with and the food that I have and the music that I hear and in the gifts. I like getting and giving gifts as much as the next person. And I don't think, for us anyway, like, I don't think we give a lot of thought to, well, we're doing what the wise men did. No, we're actually just trying to show love. And we're trying to show each other what we value in each other. And one of the things that Jenny and I do a lot is, so often our gifts are about calling each other to a higher and better self. I'll never forget when Jenny gave me a backpack as a messenger bag, you know, and she's like, I want you to teach. You have something to say to the world. So here's a bag to carry your books around so you can teach, you know. And so so the gift of calling each other to a higher and better self is a profound thing. So I totally agree. Like I said, I can get grinchy because I worry that the message of Christmas gets colored over by that. But we can hold both those things. This can be a tremendously earthy, challenging season and a beautiful one that calls us to our higher and better selves in this. In the same way.
Well, I think that I like too the thought that you're bringing forward of how do we use the things of this season towards calling us to that higher and better world, and just remembering the interconnection. And you're talking about gift giving. I've been thinking a lot about how I can think about the gifts that I'm giving and not just be part of all the consumerism. I love giving gifts.
Yeah, it's fine.
I can get into that just like more and more and more and more. And I don't think the people I'm giving these things to a will listen to the pod. So I can say, like, the thing I'm most excited about is I found these bamboo reusable like silverware that's like in a little travel pack.
Oh, sweet.
That you can like put in your like purse. And so that's like my favorite stocking stuffer I'm most excited about, because like I hate using plastic, especially when I travel. Like I hate using like plastic silverware. And I found those like little like wax paper, or not wax paper, but like those wax like coverings to use instead of plastic wrap. And and so thinking about like even how some of our gift giving, you know, and obviously buying local and supporting local artisans and all of that is part of that interconnection as well. So I don't know. I guess there's just, maybe I just, the incarnation can bring up a lot of opportunities for both and.
I totally agree. If we,
thinking about the way that we're interconnected, and the way that God's willing to be in any of it, in the beautiful, peaceful moment, and then in the mucky, gritty work on the edge of town. That, I mean, maybe that's the message. Emmanuel, God is with us in all of it.
So from Anna and I, we're going to bring this podcast to a close, but as we stop and just think about what this journey of the Food and Faith podcast has been over the last couple of months as we've gotten started. Just the idea that you all have joined in with us and have met some people that we love a great deal and have heard some amazing stories and have been inspired that there is a way of faith forward that is better for us and better for the planet, and it brings us closer to one another. We're just really glad to have shared this journey with you. And so in this holiday season, we just want to wish you all the very best. And we thank you for being with us in 2018. And this will probably be, I think this is our last pod for 2018. And we'll be back in 2019. I'm continuing to tell the stories around food and faith and the people who make that possible. And so we just say thank you. And Anna, you have a way that you want to close us out, which I think will be most appropriate.
So this is a prayer that Sarah Miles, who was for many years at St. Gregory Nyssa Episcopal Church and so one of the people who mentored me and really been influential in my connection between food and faith. She wrote this prayer, and I want to end with some excerpts of it. Take this as a blessing going forward. Holy God, Mother and Father of all life, from the beginning of your time, your Spirit breathed light over darkness. You scattered stars in the heavens and raised up the mountains. You poured out great rivers and blessed the earth with life. You made women and men in your image and loved us in our weakness, promising to stay with us wherever we go. In the winter of our longing, you came to the prophet Mary, offering your Spirit to make creation whole. You gave her a child, Jesus, your beloved Son, to turn the broken world upside down. Jesus stayed with us, healing the sick and feeding the hungry, unbinding the prisoners and raising the dead. Jesus ate with strangers, showed mercy to sinners, and taught us to follow in love without fear. As we go into this season, go with us, O Lord, as we journey to that heavenly country, that following your star, we may not wander in the darkness of this world's night, while you, who are the true and living way, shine with us to the journey's end. Amen.
Amen. Well, Anna, as we wrap up, many thanks to you as well for allowing me to accompany you on this journey and wishing you and yours the very happiest and holiest of holidays.
And you as well, my friend. It is a joy to be in this work together, and many blessings to your family, including the goats and the rabbits. Christmas blessings all around.
Thanks. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Food and Faith Podcast. Our collaborators are Wake Forest University School of Divinity, Plainsong Farm, Garden Church, and the Keep and Till. And the music is by Paul Diemer. Follow along and keep up to date with the podcast on Facebook at Food and Faith Podcast, Twitter and Instagram at Food and Faith Pod, or on our website at foodandfaithpodcast.org.